When you choose Provence seeds, you don't just win. You win so big, the very ground beneath your feet cries tears of joy. You win so big, that second place feels like a participation trophy. You win so big, you might as well be harvesting buried treasure. Oh, sorry, just one more. When you choose Provence seeds, you don't just win. You hit the damn jackpot. Don't just win, win. Talk with your retailer or visit Provence.com/winbig to get started.
Madison was messaging me last night. Snooze fest. Many minutes later, holy crap, I just lost my breath. Hello, Addison.
Hey, Billy.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised are you following that episode 11?
Oh my gosh. I genuinely, at first, I was like, this is so boring. Oh, why am I watching this? Like, action, get here sooner. And literally, as I was saying that, my entire brain was shook and I had a actual heart attack.
Addison was messaging me last night and shortly before 10 writes, we want to record the podcast first thing in the morning. I say, no, after lunch. Gotcha. Watching as we speak, snooze fest. I wrote back, I'm told it gets good, because by this point I had read our recap on tasteofcountry.com, so I kind of knew what happened even though I hadn't watched. I hope so. I'm bored. Ha. Many minutes later, all caps. Holy crap, I just lost my breath. I was in bed at that point. I was like just dozing off to Addison's like exclamations. I was like, yep, they got her.
They got me. Yeah, I really felt the need. It was one of those that I was watching it by myself. I'm back in Austin for Thanksgiving break. And I mean, not that I watch it with people anyways at my home in Nashville, but I was just like, I can't. Like, this is too big of a moment to, like, experience by myself. Granted, I assumed, I was like, there's no way Billy's up right now. But I at least need to, like, tell someone else, like, my emotions.
To exclaim and my emotions.
I need to get it off my chest because I got full body chills. Could I sleep last night? No. I had nightmares. Yeah. Anyways.
Go ahead.
No, it's just I'm being dramatic at this point, so I would like you to talk instead.
fair. I guess spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't watched. This was, I want to give it a little bit more thought, but was this the most shocking death in the history of Yellowstone? Jamie's dad, maybe? But I kind of felt like that had to happen.
That kind of had to happen. I did think Sarah Atwood. Am I giving things away too much? You just said spoiler, but we didn't give anyone's names.
Well, we gave them 30 seconds, you know? That's okay. All they get.
Okay. Sorry, y'all. Oh. I just, there's no way to talk about it without saying names. I didn't think Sarah Atwood, I thought she was too pivotal of a character to go now or even yes. Go. Like, I really didn't see her going at all. And it was one of those. I like, Billy, when I made the video for us today, when we had to put that clip in there, I literally muted it and like fast forward just to clip the parts out and make sure like it all sounded good together. I cannot watch that scene again. Like to say I genuinely had to mute my computer, I'm not being sarcastic. It was the way in which it happened. It's, you knew, I was like, this is too random of a moment for it not to be pivotal. And I just didn't think that she was going to be killed off.
Yeah. Let us email us, staff@tasteofcountry.com, if you can think of a more surprising death. I did think Sarah would get killed, but I'm surprised she got killed this early. And yes. We'll get into that here in just a few minutes. But I have a lot of questions now about what these next three episodes are going to look like. and some concerns, but mostly questions. And I'm going to live and enjoy this one here for a minute.
I am going to have to go back on my thought, though. I think in past episodes where I said, oh, I don't know if Jamie dies. Jamie's screwed. Jamie's screwed. Yeah.
No doubt about it. And I'll say, not going to miss him. After this episode, I was like, that's it, Jamie. That was your last chance. Now you're done. I'm done with
it. Yeah. He's a weasel. But before we get into all of that, because obviously we have a lot to unpack, don't worry, y'all. This episode, I did not forget about trivia. And Billy, please let us know what trivia last week was. And then I also will not forget that we're having a trivia this week.
This week's is difficult. Last week's was fairly easy. It's for a one of our new Dutton Rules t-shirts. We have a new line of Dutton Rules inspired t-shirts at tasteofcountrystore.com. You can find 3 to 5 different designs of t-shirts, tote bags, sweatshirts. And you get to pick a t-shirt of your choice if you know the correct answer, and you're first to answer it at staff@tasteofcountry.com. Last week was Casey's Navy SEAL buddy calls him Frogman. What is the significance of that?
Couldn't tell you. I have zero idea.
Frogman refers to a position within the Navy SEALs or a specific set of skills. And a ton of answers on this one, and I allowed a really broad interpretation, but combat divers, people with underwater experience and who do a lot more than just that, are referred to as Frogman. And so that was apparently Casey's role within the Navy SEALs, which I don't know that we've ever seen him in the water, have we?
I don't think so.
Yeah, but a gifted swimmer and beyond.
Let's just not forget, I only started watching Yellowstone when we started making this podcast. So prior to, I don't remember or know.
Yeah, it wasn't prior to that either, if I'm not mistaken. So congratulations to Denise. Denise, who I believe was from Amarillo, Texas. She was the first to get in and let us know that that was the definition for Frogman and the significance. Really appreciate you. As I said, we had probably more answers to this trivia question than any before, which is, I think, because a lot of people are listening. Like, we're really getting a lot of listeners this season, which I love. But also, that trivia question was fairly simple.
Well, I didn't know it. So I think that's fine.
Let me clarify, because you may, let me clarify so I don't sound like I'm just saying, well, stupid Addison didn't know. It's fairly simple to Google. You could Google it and find out. I didn't know it either, but I Googled it and found out. I guess I should be a little more, because I could just see
it's fine. Addison's. I think you just saw a single tear stroll down my face, but it's okay. I'll be fine.
Her face is drooping. All this joy she had after Sarah Atwood's death is just falling. She's all crestfallen now. I don't know, Billy. What do you want to do next?
I don't know. I don't want to record this podcast. Actually, I do want to hear what this week's trivia is.
All right. Well, this one is challenging, and it's a little bit of me sort of patting myself on the back for even learning this. I'm not going to lie.
Surprise, surprise.
We did a list of the 10 best deaths in Yellowstone history. And number one, the best death, the best revenge scene was the death of the two men who attacked Beth Dutton in her office. These were the masked men from season 2. You remember that's one of the best scenes of Yellowstone history. Certainly one of the most satisfying deaths. One of those characters, the main guy in the mask, holds a very important role in another active Taylor Sheridan show. Who is he, or what is his character's name on that show?
Excited to learn next week.
Yep.
Because I got nothing.
It's a tough one. Staff@tasteofcountry.com. As always, first person in gets one of those great Dutton Rules inspired t-shirts, which you can check out at the Taste of Country store.
I don't really even know where to begin on this episode. If we want to begin with, we learn how John Dutton's killed, like really specifically how he's killed.
I think that's the place to start. And so many things about this episode, I thought, really slotted in well. It was a puzzle piece that really fit at the end of the puzzle, and really even brought in some pieces that maybe we learned about in the very first episode of the very first season. And I'll explain what I mean by that a little bit later. But we get to relive the night John Dutton's killed, really through the eyes of the three men who killed him. Three men break in, they suffocate him, or at least knock the air out of him. So he's fainted and then take him to the bathroom. They slip a little OxyContin in the medicine cabinet. Presumably they're trying to stage like some sort of addiction thing going on with the governor. And then they put the gun in his hand, put it to his head, and pull the trigger. So it looks like he pulled the gun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this episode was one, and I said this last episode, and it was the same. I was obviously paying attention, but they don't, you can easily get lost. What's present day? What's past? Okay, wait, we're back to present day. Oh, wait, we're in the car in Beth's random scene of learning Italian. Still very confused about that scene. You have to pay attention this episode.
I think we're probably done with the flashback scenes.
You think? I don't think so.
It's a bit of a guess, but I think maybe now we're up to speed. And what we learned there through that flashback is Beth drove through the night from Texas after she leaves Rip, and she goes right to the governor's mansion to find her dad died. So she didn't get home. There wasn't any time gap. I don't think that's terribly important, but sort of interesting. And then at the moment of his death, 3:53, not only does she feel it, like she feels that something's wrong because she's driving somewhere in the middle of nowhere. Casey Dutton is wide awake thinking something terrible has just happened. And then he gets the call that John Dutton's been killed and is and knows he's not just having a bad dream, as Monica suggested.
I really thought that was well done. I think that just represents so much more of they cared about their dad and are so, you know, you're bound by blood and that you just sense something's wrong. They didn't have to do that, but I thought that was well done.
I would have liked to have known how the hitmen got in the house.
It just pick a lock.
But doesn't it seem like someone would have heard them? Like, I don't know. It's an old house, probably had some creaky floors. Like,
oh, it's odd to me that John was, I'm assuming he was in there alone, or it sounded like he would, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think it's all weird that, yes, I understand that they tripped the security system so everything went dark. But I'm like, this is too easy to trip. Like, there's some – if this guy is of such high power in, you know, their state, like, there should be more than just the one security guard out in front.
One mall cop. That's who we one need to cover cop. The governor of Montana.
That's all he needs. You know, it did seem a little flawed of – yeah, and I learned that John Dutton is a very heavy sleeper.
Yeah. But I can see why you...
Who got to play him? Like, that's cool. We don't see his face once, you know?
Yeah, I studied the credits for that character's name. I also wanted to find out the names of the actors who got to kill Sarah Dutton, and they weren't in the final credits. Not that I saw, but I'd be curious to know that as well.
That stinks. They were definitely... They had lines.
Sure. Yeah, and other people did. The new governor was in there. The sheriff was in there. Hmm. I can kind of see why the first 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes really, were a little bit sleepy for you. Because, I thought it was there was a lot of, like, procedural things happening. A lot of talk of, like, conservation easements and, like, land deeds and trusts.
And like, I start sometimes to lose Yellowstone interest.
Gets so deep into that world and talks so fast. It's like, what's going on? I have no experience in this world, but I think the long and the short of it is this new governor, he's on Jamie's side. He's like, okay, let's bring back in Markwood Equities. Let's get them building as soon as possible. We'll take out, but he's going a step further. He's going to have the ranch claimed by the state by eminent domain, which means basically the state's going to take the ranch. And that's part of his plan. I don't know. After that, I thought it picked up once Casey started talking to the ME.
Yes, I agree. And by just, you know, for folks over here like me, Billy explained, Emmy is medical examiner. Just you're throwing out terminology that people might not know.
Fair. Yeah, yeah. The medical examiner. The person who did the autopsy.
Which that was Casey. So good. I loved that scene because of Casey's prior just military knowledge of knowing how to do exactly what those three hitmen did of knocking someone unconscious. He was able to just really push the medical examiner of, hey, and he did it in a way that wasn't like a forceful, rude. It was just a, hey, if, you know, because she was pretty adamant on this was a suicide, and he didn't, you know, press her up to the wall and say, show me that it was murder. He just very confidently and matter of fact said, okay, if it was a murder, what would this look like? You know, like he kind of turned it into like, look, I'm not here to create chaos. I just genuinely let's play this role if it was a murder. And therefore doing that is when the medical examiner realized, crap, this definitely was not a suicide.
Well, her question of, so after Casey describes how he was trained to do one of these, she asks, what if the person's sleeping? You know, what if the person, then what do you do?
Yeah.
What he describes is three people, one takes the legs, one takes the arms, and the one other one chokes him out. That's what got me thinking, because that's exactly how the hit happened. So that told me, oh, these were ex-military guys, which in and of itself, maybe not a huge surprise. I guess maybe it's, I don't know many hitmen, but like I assume a good majority of them have some military experience or some training.
I think we need to circle back to the fact that you said, I don't know many hitmen. I don't know any Billy. So I guess apparently you do know a few. I should be concerned.
I mean, it's just the one or two.
Okay. Well, you had a interesting theory, and this is the part that made me think. I would love to talk about his friend, Casey's friend, Cade.
Yeah.
Cade.
Cade McPherson is the character's name. That is Casey's Navy SEAL buddy. And remember, he called him last episode and said, hey, I'm trying to figure out who did this hit. And Cade says, well, there's not a lot of groups that will do that. And he mentions one group out of Houston. And for a number of different reasons, he says that this Houston group, he doesn't think was responsible because it's a little too high profile and would get him into some trouble and maybe revoke some contracts they have in other parts of the world. And then he says he's going to get back to him. And then Cade never calls back, which, you know, a non-returned phone call, probably not going to make great TV. Not a huge deal. You know, seeing Casey wondering, why is my buddy calling me back? This Cade guy stood me up. You know, there's probably other things to get to. So I didn't really think too much of that. I thought maybe it would circle around here into the next episode, or maybe it'd just be like one of those things like Sarah Atwood's Real Identity, where it presents itself and then sort of disappears and we never hear from it again. Until Sarah goes to the phone store and buys a burner phone. And then the cameras were very intentional about showing her open that phone and pull out the phone card and get it set up. And then she pulls out a business card with a phone number on it. And she dials the phone number and you can see the phone number. It's a 713 area code, which is Houston.
Houston, Texas.
That feels intentional. Like Taylor Sheridan, he could have just wrote 555-5555 and not showed us anything. But the fact that he got us back to Houston, it feels like one of those little things, like those little seeds he planted just for us to sort of find a little needle in the haystack for us to find and sort of run with if you're really squinting like, you know, I do.
Well, and I was about to say that was such – he did that for the people who are like Billy, who are combing through this so intensely, because I did not catch on to that.
And then from there, you think about what Cade was doing when he picked up that phone. He was just returning home from some sort of mission. He was in all black, had a big pack of gear. A few moments later, he's returning guns to his gun safe. He said he was out of the country and didn't hear about John Dutton's hit. But a lot of sort of coincidental evidence, I think, that could put Cade Dutton in that room as one of the three men.
Wait, not Cade
John Dutton.
No, Cade.
McPherson.
What's his last name? McPherson.
Yeah.
In that room. I know. And that just, I like would have never thought about that. I innocently am just looking at this of like, oh, he's just returning from a job, like thinking nothing of it. But it could, but then do you think he would tell Casey, like, this is a $1 million hit? Like, do you think he'd give him all that information? Like, I would just not.
It's a $40 to $50 million hit.
Oh, sorry. I only gave it a mil.
I don't know. a number of people after that episode where Kate appeared pointed out that he had just returned to some sort of hit. And they pointed out that that was kind of unusual. One or two people maybe even suggested offhandedly that he was responsible, but I don't think anybody seriously thought of it at the time. It just seemed like something like his character would be doing, just casually putting guns away in a gun safe. It's on brand for the fella Caden McPherson. But all these things sort of lined up. It's like, why include all of this in the script if we're not pointing sort of back to this Cade guy? And then the reason I kind of don't like this theory is because it doesn't really, I don't know, it doesn't give us, set us up for like that big aha moment at the end of this show. You know, like,
yeah, other than it's like his friend screwed him over and killed his dad. I mean, you know, there's that.
Right. It's a total plot shift. It's all of a sudden we've gone from Sarah and Jamie versus Beth and Casey to Casey against this black ops group and whoever has hired him. Like, it's like, oh, well, that's a plot shift that seems kind of shoehorned in there. Three episodes before the end of the whole dang thing.
Unless Casey gets killed this next episode.
I suppose.
And then you'd have to have a different plot line running.
What does Jamie do? Like, where's Jamie at now? Like, Sarah's dead. Jamie has no friends in the world. What role is he going to have on this show?
He's like stripped naked in front of a crowd. Like, he's just bare. Good luck.
He might as well be dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, even if he defeats Beth and Casey and Rip, like, at best, he's serving time in prison. Like, he can't get a job. Like, he's going to be screwed. He's like, Yeah. I could see him dying next episode, because usually characters don't live past their usefulness on Yellowstone. But, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, this whole Beth versus Jamie thing, I feel like it's over in my mind. Like, she still needs to kill him, but he's dead.
Yeah, he's dead. He's a mute point. Sorry, Wes Bentley. He's done in my eyes. I've moved on. I'm like, which character's next?
Did you feel a bit bad for Jamie at all when Sarah was killed? It didn't tug at your heartstrings at all?
Well, I was still recovering from my loss of breath from the scene. But I think there was a brief moment of pity for him, of I think he genuinely actually liked her, where I think I sometimes question, I'm like, do they actually like each other? And in that final scene, I did feel like they both liked each other.
I thought they're fixing to say I love you to each other, and if that would have happened, I might have quit the whole dang thing here. I might have quit everything Yellowstone if they started dropping L-bombs on each other moments before she died.
I did, just how they even, like, he called her back to say, hey, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have slapped you. Like, he's never hit a woman in all of Yellowstone. And, like, right? He hasn't hit Beth. Beth has hit him. Has he? I think
he's probably hit Beth. Okay. He's probably hit Beth.
Anyways, like, the fact that he called her, like, he has at least, what I felt good about is, this is so depressing, but it's like, they both said they're sorry before she was killed. Like, he doesn't live with that over his head, but it just was kind of, we've been questioning this whole time of, do they actually like each other, specifically her? And I felt it. They did.
It was clear she was cracking. She knew the end was near once she called that number she was giving, because I think she was trying to call Grant, the guy who she set up the hitman through. Once she called him and it was a disconnected phone, she knew she was a dead woman. And I thought it was some really strong acting by Don Olivieri there to kind of play like a maniacal version of herself, who's already a maniacal character.
I've really enjoyed her as an actress.
Yeah. Yeah, she was good. I won't miss the character, but I'll miss the acting.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So one more point here to Sarah Atwood's death is, there was another little Easter egg that I wonder how many people picked up on. How it all plays out is, Sarah's on the phone with Jamie and she's at a stoplight, and a couple pull up next to her and ask to roll down the windows, and they ask for directions to some random location. And Sarah's like, I don't know who that is. And the guy goes, are you Sarah Atwood? And she's like, how would you know that? He pulls out a gun, shoots her right in the head. Mm-hmm. Then he gets out of the car and shoots her 5 times in the chest. And the camera was intentional about showing you the 5 circular-shaped bullet holes right around his heart, 1 in the head. This is exactly how we learn that people in like first-tier military units make the kill, because this is how Casey killed Robert Long, Monica's brother, in season 1, episode 1. Yeah, because it was a kind of a minor plot point back then, because Casey, they were trying to, they didn't want the police to know that Casey shot Robert Long. The cops were like, oh, it's kind of interesting that there is this military style execution that happened, 5 in the chest, 1 in the head.
Oh.
And they got away with it. So another sign, which maybe isn't a big surprise, that those shooters were ex-military as well. A lot to think about over here, isn't it, Erasmus?
I need something else to talk about. Can we move on?
All right, let's talk about Rainwater. I got one more thing. I'm just exhausted.
I hate that scene. I just hate it so much. Sorry, y'all, if you wanted to talk about it more.
Is it your most hated scene of Yellowstone?
No, but I also can't remember. I feel like last season I had one of these moments also.
Yeah. And then a lot of them during 1883 and 1923.
Oh, yeah, for sure that. I think I was crying every single 1923, I was a mess. I dreaded watching because I was like, I'm going to cry again. I'm going to be upset.
All right. Chief Rainwater comes partway through. He comes before Sarah gets killed. And he, as we anticipated, he offers help to Beth. His help's not as specific as maybe we would have thought. He's just saying, if you have any ideas, I'm happy to help. I can help talk you through them or whatever you want to do. And they, he kind of reveals that they share a common bond. But the one thing he does do really well is sort of lays out why the ranch is going to go bankrupt. And it happens so, so fast. Like Rainwater just spits all these things that are going to happen super fast, but it's all sort of logical, maybe not real. I don't know. I don't live in that world. But essentially what he says is that the state is going to drive down the value of the land by condemning the airport. Then they're going to try to sell, but the IRS is going to use a different appraiser. So the taxes will be at that sort of elevated purchase rate. So they'll owe way more in tax than they have made from the sale. Then the state will come in and lowball them. And through the course of the proceedings, basically take everything that the estate owns and leave everybody with no money. Beth seems to, if not know this, understand that they're doomed. And I think the plan she comes up with is to, gosh, do they come up with a plan even?
Not really. I not to my knowledge. I think she just hears him out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know totally. It seems like that partnership is going to be the heart of what happens to the ranch next. But it's been so hit and miss with Chief Rainwater and Mo. Like, they're in some episodes, not in others. Like, I don't know when or how that comes forward.
I was left liking Rainwater. I haven't always loved him. And I think because he really has no stake in the game anymore. I mean, he literally said, he's like, this land will not, it won't be mine. Although I'm like, well, technically if Tate takes over the land, it still will be in that world. But I think he's just genuinely at this point of like, I'll help. I like him more as a friend rather than a foe, if you will.
Yeah. He seems to be the only honorable character on the show.
Yeah.
There's really not anybody else. So, all right, well, that brings us up to episode 12, which is on Sunday. And I think we have to get some resolution here with Casey and Jamie, because somehow along the way, Jamie has convinced Casey that he didn't do it. My theory, I guess, is that Sarah's death is going to be all the evidence that Casey needs to think his brother was guilty of this.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think Jamie is dying next episode.
I don't understand how Jamie could have looked at Casey and lied so bold-faced, but he couldn't look at Beth and do anything close to the similar. Like, I understand that at all.
I think because maybe he doesn't... I think Casey is significantly more gullible, and I think tries to see the best in people, where Beth maybe can sniff out a mole anywhere. And so I think maybe he's just terrified of realizing like Beth knows, like Beth will be able to call out my BS.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That was a weird scene for me. It didn't seem on brand for Casey, Jamie, I mean. But so they'll have their confrontation. And if I'm right about this Cade McPherson fella, I think we'll probably learn a little bit more about that next week as well.
I kind of hope so. I haven't thought about your theory until we've been talking about it. And I'm excited to – I'm just curious how that's going to play out, if it even does.
Staff at tasteofcountry.com with questions, comments, reactions, corrections, insults. By the way, last week we had someone who commented and seemingly insulted us. He clarified. He got back in our YouTube comment section. He's like, no, wasn't talking about you. Love you guys.
The snowflakes are snowflakes.
Are other people. He said, in fact, they said he was listening to the podcast on Spotify, stopped listening, ran to YouTube and tapped off a comment.
Wait, that's so kind.
Yeah, that was pretty nice. Uno momento. My kids have just arrived and they started screaming.
I was like, I think I hear children and it's not mine. I don't have any.
All right, I'm back. It's real life over here. Let's get to the questions and comments and we'll get out of here.
All righty. Billy has some kids to go take care of.
Apparently.
Let me pull them up. Alrighty, the first one I have for us is from Troy, who says, it's never a good sign in Yellowstone if a random stranger asks you if you are you. Bullets start flying soon. Amen, Troy. Yep. And that is why I tensed every muscle in my body, because I knew it was coming.
It happened to John Dutton at the end of season 3. Are you John Dutton? Bom, 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 bom. Are you Sarah Atwood? Bom, 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 bom. Maybe there's a third example, but Troy... hit the nail on the head there, buddy. That and birds. Never a good sign on Yellowstone.
Now I'm going to be jumpy anytime I hear my name. Are you Addison? Nope. Nope. Actually, nope. I'm not.
Nope. Nope. Keep driving, mister.
Not her. Kelly says, I would want to know how different this last season would be if Kevin Costner would have been part of it. Same. I don't think we're ever going to have that. If we could sit down with Taylor Sheridan, I would love to.
Well, I don't think it would be the last season. I think we would have gotten at least one, if not two more seasons. But you're right. I think Kevin Taylor Sheridan's, he's probably too proud to admit that another ending was an alternative or a possibility.
And then last one I have for us is from YouTube. And it says, I think Summer will come back pregnant. I don't think so. That's my
opinion. So here's the thing. I asked for any and all theories in a recent YouTube video. I said, just bring them to me. Like anything that you think is crazy, this is a no judgment zone. Lord knows we've put a few out there that have been a little bit wacky.
Right.
Might have done it this episode even. The summer pregnant one. You know, if that to me would be a sign that a show has taken a few steps down like a peg, because that feels like a very soap opera-y thing to do, which, you know, you could argue this case, the show is a soap opera, but I think overall the writing is better than like soap opera level writing. So Summer coming back in pregnant, like ready to accept her ranch.
Kind of
like,
a lot.
I feel like that. I feel like she's not. By the way, one little trivia fact with regards to Summer. We know her husband is Stephen Kay, who's one of the directors of Yellowstone. Stephen Kay's daughter, Lily, plays Clara, John's assistant on the show.
Keeping it on the family as normal. Per usual.
Yeah, everybody gets a job. You get a job. You get a job.
Well, y'all, staff at tasteofcountry.com is where you can leave any of your questions or trivia. As always, highly encourage that you share this podcast. Hey, Thanksgiving gets boring. Just turn this on. I recommend that. Do you like what I did there, Billy? So if you get bored over Thanksgiving, sure, just turn this on. I'm sure your three young sons will love it.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely they would. I'm sure yours would as well.
Truly, I don't have any kids, but my brothers might enjoy it. Y'all, truly, thank you so much for listening. We enjoy doing this, and this episode is a Dutton Rules podcast. I've really got to work on my ending, Billy. I've been struggling recently. Okay, we're going to end scene. This is the Dutton Rules Yellowstone Podcast, another hair-raising Bonesboro podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.